drill music, or even before rap, before YSL, was there no crime in Atlanta? Was there no violent crime in Atlanta? Were no cops ever killed in Atlanta?
Not like
this. Or Chicago or any of these other places? Of course there was, right?
Hold on. That's why Chicago is different. They don't really jump down like that with Chicago because it's always been like that with Chicago. Atlanta has been, and again, I'm speaking very like, I almost feel like I'm using colloquials to kind of explain the experience there. It's like, yo, but everybody who's accused of some shit.
Can you answer that though before I move on to the next question? Do you think crime, especially this kind of violent crime, did not exist in a place like Atlanta before?
I don't know, like the popularization
of like
if we say
rappers?
Chicago, yes. If we say Chicago, yes. If we say Atlanta, no. I'm telling you, look at the crime rate of Atlanta. I'm telling you, we could Google it right now together. Look at the crime rate of Atlanta.
I feel like Atlanta crime in Atlanta, Georgia has decreased since 2009, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, That would be consistent with the rest of the country, for the record.
Hold on. By the way,
a narrative where people constantly talk about like crime being a crime wave, and this is something I talk about quite frequently. I've done a bunch of videos on this, specifically in Los Angeles. I've talked about this. Homicides have increased, certainly in Los Angeles, for example, and yet property crime has fairly consistently diminished. And this is like not numbers that people are making up. This is the cops. You know, this is their own numbers.
Hassan, I feel like you have a distrust for police officers already, which I think we all do. But here's the thing, and this is just undoubtedly. Gang-related violence in Atlanta has increased.
So not overall crime. You're talking about gang-related violence.
I mean, again, obviously, there's going to be more focus, at least within the black community, on communities where African-Americans are, right? So that's usually places where gang violence is more prone to happen. But I know without a doubt, gang violence has increased. And from what I know, overall violence has increased, at least since this DA has taken office. Now, you're going back to 2009. Like, again, I don't know what happened since 2009. So if we just take this...
No, but that's not an individual year. That's a consistent drop, as you can see, right? If you're looking at my stream, you can see that that's a consistent drop. Yeah. All the way to 2018, a minor increase, and then restabilizing.
No, but hear what I'm saying, Hassan. Like, for example, right now, the place that everybody's trying to, like, we hear rappers speaking about this is Philadelphia. Meek Mill, who's a guy who's promoted death and violence and drugs more than anybody else in Philadelphia. He's even said, we have to chill out. We have to stop. There's an irrational increase that is due to just like not only gang violence, but also some people believing that the music that they see is relevant and the artists that they see is relevant are also promoting this type of music. I understand you want to just extrapolate it to be like, oh, that's just a natural trend. Listen, if the people in these communities, and this is what I'm saying, you're looking shallow, on a shallow level.
No, but you said crime increased, but it has decreased, is what I'm saying. And I think that's important.
In Atlanta?
Yeah.
In Philadelphia? In what areas then? Because again, put like this, there's overall a lot of things that happen in America that we as black Americans, we could tell when it's affecting our communities.
You said I was talking about Andrew Tate and I rolled him, right? Remember? Because mm-hmm. one of the main components in that conversation was his over-reliance on anecdotes over empirical evidence. Now, we have a tendency to be biased in the way that we interpret things, right?
Yeah.
And the media is very good at cutting a narrative. They're very good at cutting a narrative that, like, crime is on the rise. Crime is exploding. But when you look at when you pull yourself out of that for a brief moment, okay, and you think about something even as emotional as like violent crime. You know, I've had friends that have been robbed. You know, it's a very emotional, traumatic experience. I get it. But when you remove yourself from that for a brief moment and think about it with respect to the empirical evidence, you recognize that the media narrative is actually not reflective of the reality itself.
No, I disagree with that, and I know you're trying to say it's anecdotal situations. I'm using,
but that's the truth. I'm showing you the numbers because I'm
using a specific verbiage. The conversation you had with Andrew Tate, he just wanted to say that niggas could drive more than women. Like, that's him. I'm telling you specifically. Like, I've seen everything. I'm telling you specifically that the reason why everybody is tuning in to what's going on in Philadelphia these days, the reason why Meek Mill in his heyday, right? We're talking about 2012 to 2015. This is probably the height of his career. He wasn't talking about, oh, there's some crazy murder rate in Philadelphia, because the precincts of where it was happening in. And that's the thing you know about a lot. It's not only about, are we just taking Philadelphia as a whole? Are we taking actual gang violence happening in a few particular cities? If you listen to the Queen, Fonnie Willis, she even said it herself. I'll get you the clip if you want me to, where she said, violence on Cleveland Ave has increased. What is Cleveland Ave known for? A particular gang. So I get what you're saying, where you're just trying to use Atlanta. But again, most of these influential things that we're talking about is coming from certain precincts.
First look at the Atlanta police officer shot multiple times on the job this week.
Is that on your end or is that on my end?
Sorry.
Yeah, if you try to have a conversation about crime across the board, like, you got to have a larger conversation about crime in these areas that you're talking about, whether it be Philadelphia or not. If you reduce it down to one zip code, if you try to hyper focus on one street number, then you're not going to arrive at the larger, clearer pictures. Fannie Willis is not the DA of Cleveland Street. She's the DA of
but she's focusing on the areas where crime is popping up the most.
By the way, here's the issue, right? Here's the issue. The reason why you don't do that, the reason why you don't look at like an individual street, is because when you hyper focus, when you get down to that as your evidence, that is susceptible to a lot of bias takes and selection bias in the identical capacity to you being susceptible to your own anecdotes, like being motivated by your own personal biases that you can't recognize. Because when you sample an individual street, individual streets can be bloody for an extended period of time, and then the violence moves elsewhere, right? Like, that's why you look at the violent crime rate in Atlanta rather than just specifically one area.
Hassan, listen. I could tell, by the way, I think we both went to Rutgers. I don't know if you know. We both went to Rutgers. I graduated with a biomathematics degree, okay? I took theory of probability, all that shit. And I like how you're talking, because it kind of harps on my background from that. Fuck that shit, though. There's hoods in every city. That's the point I'm trying to tell you. Yo, put it like this. The city I live in, I know where the violence is going to be at. If it's over here, it's a fucking problem. It's never violence. I know where the violence is going to be at. I still live in Jersey. My headquarters is in Jersey City. My headquarters is in the art district. They have moved out all the ghetto shit blocks away. There's usually not crime where my headquarters is at. I know exactly where it's going to be. So I know you're like, oh no, the violence, you're acting like it's like Casper. Like, oh no, the ghost might pop up here, then there, then there, then there. We just got to look at it. Oh no, everybody know where the real, let me ask you a question. If I had to tell you...
Smaller, hyper-specific, localized, selected slivers of crime are susceptible to be cherry-picked, though. That's my point.
Yo, hold on.
And
let me ask
that's
you a
why you look at the broader crime rate.
Let me ask you a question.
You look at the crime rate across the board.
If you were the commissioner of police and you were in Chicago, right? Granted, every time when you have one of these meetings and, you know, your lieutenant or whoever is telling you, yo, this is what they're doing in South Side Chicago. Historically, where all the niggas is at, historically, the most violent part, are you going to be like, no, just spread out equally. I want a lot of y'all over by, like, Peoria. I need like, you guys on the outskirts. Or are you going to say, if we got 1,500 cops, put 1,000 cops in South Side Chicago, because that's where they're giving it up? Brother, you're not racist. You can just say it.
By the way, you're quite literally describing why police operate as an occupying force in these sorts of communities, because
they
of that contentious relationship. Police
should.
Are there to protect and serve. They should be in every neighborhood, and police are not supposed to be the ones solving crime, as they don't actually solve crime, for the record. They don't. They don't do a really good job of solving crime at all. So crime, if you and I both understand that crime is not manifesting as a consequence of, like, you know, black people living in a specific area, right? I don't think you meant that.
No, I don't mean
instead,
that.
But it's a product of material conditions.
Impoverished neighborhoods.
Then the solution to crime is not about over-policing black neighborhoods, especially considering that black neighborhoods have been over-policed. Chicago's a really good example of this. I'm glad you brought up Chicago once again. So there was a plot of land in the south side of Chicago that was supposed to be sold. And the mayor at the time, Rahm Emanuel, wanted to turn around and turn this into a police academy. But what the community actually wanted was for that plot of land to be sold so that they could get more funding for their school system. CPS is incredibly underfunded. Time and time again, studies have shown that after school programs and basketball leagues and things of that nature have led to an immediate and recognizable drop in crime, specifically in the neighborhoods that they implement these sorts of programs. So why the fuck do these rich white people still continue to avoid that reality and try to over-police black communities? That's not the way you actually solve crime. If you want to solve crime, I want to solve crime. I don't want crime, right? You don't want it either. Then do the right things, right? That's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to actually
tackle
the problem.
Both things could be true, though. Hassan, come on. Yo, Hassan. Like, yo, Hassan, put like this. Yo, like, I know you're so intellectually, like, you know, advanced that you understand that. By the way, we're not even disagreeing. It's like you're trying to say, no, all you guys got to do is give them more resources and back out the cops. What? Yo, you back out the cops in Southside Chicago and you get them more resources? Yeah, it's going to be more deaths. You can't believe that. Hey, listen, that might be long-term.
I don't believe that.
No, that's a long-term perspective to say, hey, listen, this is a real reason why crime is happening, which I agree. Usually anywhere where crime is happening is because they are underserved with resources and they don't have the enough.
I didn't say airdrop Dracos in a fucking O block and leave the
no,
cop.
But you,
I meant like
hold
resources
on, but why would
like
you take the police out?
I mentioned social safety nets.
Why would you take the police out? So, listen. In Chicago, you talk to anybody who's on, like, you know, you got to talk to, like, an extra, like, killer or street dude. They're going to be like, yo, they feel they have to have a gun. Everybody's rolling around with illegal guns, and you're trying to say, let's bring the cops out of there. Just bring some more YMCAs and basketball courts, and they're going to get along. What?
I unironically do believe that over-policing, which has increased over the course of the past 50 fucking years and has, I mean, obviously the overarching crime rate has dropped regardless of wherever you go. But over-policing has not been a solution to the crime in Chicago. So why not try something a little bit different? I'm not saying don't have a single cop in Chicago.
What I'm saying is if you want to have
cops in Chicago, I'm not a police abolitionist in the sense that I do understand that there is still going to be a group of individuals that are, whether democratically organized or not, maintaining the presence of law and order, okay?
Yo.
And catching pedophiles and shit, okay? I think that you need that. You need the, and solve crimes. You need detectives. So that's number one. What I'm stating is over-policing has demonstrably not worked. Social services have demonstrably worked universally, not just in Chicago, but in all of these other places. So instead of having a hyper-militarized a group of individuals that are not even from the streets that they're patrolling, okay, have people from said community or have a police unit that is accountable to the community in some meaningful capacity, okay, while also simultaneously
with these motherfuckers calling themselves savages
these resources
and, shit?
And putting them back into social safety nets and school programs.
Yo, I'm going to shock you with a statement. And by the way, anybody in my chat don't agree, and listen, this is why, yo, I'm an independent thinker. Y'all could disagree. We could argue it from here on till rest of the time. This is why the only person who had a real solution for Chicago that could have possibly worked is motherfucking Donald Trump. I'm serious. Revenge killing. Bro, nobody care about no social services and after-school basketball program when people talking about they smoking on their dead cut. Bro, this is revenge violence consistently perpetuating itself. There's nothing you could give other than hard policing of removing those individuals who are more prone to that from that environment. Bro, they're not going to just stop and be like, oh, shit,
wait,
we just got
mean?
A nice
individuals
basketball court.
Prone,
let me stop but killing like, each other. What?
Okay, but you don't think that, like, the people living in these neighborhoods are, like, inherently more violent, right? You don't think that.
They're why rolling are around they that with way? Dracos and rocket launchers.
Why does
you got to send the feds
why does
in,
that
bro?
Violence manifest itself in the way that it does?
Say again?
Why does the violence that you speak of manifest itself in the way that it does?
Because it's cyclical, because it's of course the initial right reason is because of the societal effect on their family lives or them as people in terms of lack of resources and shit like that. But once violence starts, right, you're usually mm-hmm. seeing, like, for example, when Lil Durk, like, again, I'm using anecdotal shit to kind of, like, prove my point, but I have a bunch of them. When someone dies, you're going to see a weekend of shooting. If someone gets hurt, it's a lot of revenge stuff. It's literally just warfare. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily saying it's – obviously, again, I'm not disagreeing with you in the sense of okay. to fix this.
Why do you think white people in Connecticut don't handle it that way? Do you think that there is an inherent reason for it? Or do you think it's because those guys in like middle class America have a significantly better material condition than the dudes you're talking about who are living in literally like third world conditions in the wealthiest nation on earth?
Hold on. Let me tell you this. If white dudes in Connecticut, if you give me about 30 of them, And all of their brothers or sisters was a victim of gun violence, maybe half of them would be like, you know what? I'm going to seek therapy. I'm going to try to, you know, move on from this. The other them, they're picking up a stick, bro. They're going to go and have some revenge.
Especially if they believe. My point is, if you're in a better position overall, if you are subjected to better material conditions,
so the initial
overall,
problem didn't start.
You're
then.
Not going to find yourself in a cycle of violence anyway.
Oh, okay.
So when I talk about it, I talk about literally fixing the material conditions because I want the underlying problem to go away.
Okay, but how do you stop the cycle of violence? Okay, so you build the best infrastructure.
I never said there should be no police whatsoever. By the way, I do understand that if someone commits a crime,
you said
yes,
less
the police
should
go in there, stop it, make sure that the person is no longer committing crime.
I
understand that. It's like
yo,
pretty
these
basic
days.
Stuff.
I don't know, like, you know, I look at the comm stats when it comes to, like, you know, places like Cook County and compared to other places. The amount of gun violence that police supposedly have to respond to or properly investigate, they have given up. Especially even after, remember what happened in Baltimore when people just called the police racist?
Right, I'm glad we're giving them billions of fucking dollars, so they're just like, yeah, fuck it.
No,
like,
no, no.
We're
no.
giving up.
Hold on. Okay, no, okay.
They need more money, I think.
No, I'm with you on that. But you're saying less police when we have also demonized the police for doing what they need to do to stop it.
No, they're not doing what they need to do to stop it. Like Derek Chauvin wasn't doing what he needed to do to stop George Floyd, right? You understand that? You agree with
George
me on
Floyd
that, I
is
hope.
Not a dude shooting up the block or doing gang violence like how most of them niggas in Chicago is doing, bro. Yo, that's
not,
so isolated.
But they're not doing that. If your hammer, everything looks like a nail, and cops are a fucking hammer.
I'll give you that point. I'll give you that point.
They are
we could
dealt
have better
with
cops.
A problem that they are incapable of solving.
No, I'll give you that point. We do need better cops, and I don't want to sit here and act like I'm saying every cop is perfect. My whole point is that, listen, I'm with you, and I think there's a lot of moments and points of agreement. Like, I'm saying, yo, you're right. Like, we do need the better infrastructure and all these other things to stop the cycle because you're right. People in Connecticut, they're not doing that. But we also have to be very aggressive and very intentional in the approach to let people know that, hey, listen, violence can't beget more violence because that is – hey, that's what I realized
hey,
in Chicago.
I agree. That's why cops are a terrible fucking method of solving violence.
So how do you stop more violence when people are moving off? You remember
you just said violence doesn't beget more violence, and now you're saying cops are the only way to stop violence.
No. Well, if
you and I are in agreement,
no.
Cops are a violent force.
Yo, because Hassan, somebody kills your brother, you're picking up a gun, maybe, or you're more likely to. Especially if you have nothing to live for, or that's a way of life, you're probably going to do it. What I'm trying to say is that. You have to stop the cycle even if you improve the conditions. Because put it like this, when these people are talking to me, they're saying this, like that group or that gang killed my cousin. I don't give a fuck what they did. Bro, it's the
New
same
United
thing with war.
We
watch war on
a, look at the Atlanta
oh my God.
Police officer shot multiple times.
Okay.
Yo,
I have a quick question for you, right? Let's say in your younger days, would you ever throw hands? Like if someone, you know, tried to fuck with you?
I would if it came to that.
Okay. You probably won't do that right now, would you?
Depend on what level.
And I'm not saying this to be like, oh, you're a pussy or anything. There's a larger point here.
It depends on what level, but also if I could avoid it, of course I would not. Because, you know, I have a lot more things going on.
Exactly. That's my point. You have way too much to fucking lose for getting into a dumbass scuffle. And if people have more to lose, then they're less likely to act in violent ways. But if you have no fucking future prospects, if your school system is completely fundamentally broken, the teachers don't want to fucking be there, you're still working on like textbooks that are from 1957, okay? And you see so much violence happening as a consequence in every fucking facet of your life. And you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Of course I'm going to pick up a gun and go and do whatever the fuck I can to survive. Okay,
I agree with you there.
That's the point. And if you're born into that environment, it is very difficult to get out of it. And the only way to actually get out of it is to make sure that you have something to lose, to make sure that you have a future prospect, to make sure that these kids are being educated, to make sure that they have
here's the biggest thing
to fucking do.
Here's the biggest thing, though. You see, education won't do it. The majority of these people, and this is why the feds, which they've rarely ever really fucked with Chicago like that, unless it's super drug stuff, they went into O-Block. And what O-Block is a low-income housing option. And whatever you're saying with that, by the way, at least I know in Jersey, I don't know if you still live in Jersey, but if you go and build
I live in Los Angeles.
Okay, if you build a high rise, if you build anything, usually they require you have some option for people of low income housing. So when
policies, unfortunately, do not meet the demands of the market, though. But yes, I'm familiar. But they do it in New York, too.
But hold on. When you have inherently a bunch of people who are living in low income housing, despite the opportunity, they're more prone to just be at risk of throwing it all away just off a petty disagreement. You're living pretty good. You're going to think about it five times. So would I. But these people, you're living in O-Block, and this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about people who are living in mansions. Like, I don't think, you know what I mean? Like,
I said raise the fucking minimum entry level for existence for all Americans. We have the wealth to be able to do so. We're the wealthiest nation.
It sounds like socialism.
And you still got motherfuckers living in Alabama, specifically in black neighborhoods, with no working sewage system. Like, that's disrespectful as fuck. That's completely ridiculous. You literally still have plantations in Angola. The Louisiana State Penitentiary operates like a fucking plantation. It's named after a plantation.
Horrible. It's horrible.
This is not a mistake. This is why I get so fucking mad whenever people try to deny white supremacy's permanent fucking institutional power in American development. There's a reason for all of this. Okay. That's why motherfuckers like Tim Pool, who you said you watch, are regularly serving that same institutional, oppressive hierarchy by denying the reality of white supremacy in societal development.
Okay. So then I ask you, right? Because, you know, and by the way, I like watching both of y'all because I think y'all are rational and I see a lot of thought to what
he is not rational. Not even remotely rational. But anyway, let's.
All right. So when you're also kind of borderline teetering on what would most people say is socialism, my guy. Like, again.
Wait, let me tell you something about myself then.
Oh, you believe in that?
Yeah. I don't give a shit. Yeah. I don't think that the capitalist organization of the economy is adequate. We don't need to have that conversation.
Wait, no. But yes. It's no way you believe in that. Hey, listen, I'm one of the biggest pocket watchers ever known to man. Like, I've already summed you up in what you make. And I sum up rappers, I sum up entertainers. Salute to my guy Kai. I just did a whole little rap sheet of his thing.
You are socialism someone, is not a poverty cult. You don't have to be poor to be socialist, even though you can still advocate for those who are less fortunate than you. Russell,
you
Brand
wouldn't give up the majority of your luxuries just to improve the lives of other people who may not be trying or working hard.
That's not socialism. That is a bastardized American interpretation of socialism.
So Russell Brand once
famously said, when I was poor and I advocated for socialism, they said I was jealous of the wealthy's success. Now I'm wealthy and I advocate for socialism, and they say I'm a hypocrite. Turns out they just don't want me advocating for socialism.
I'm gonna tell you why they're gonna say you're a hypocrite.
Of the working class.
I'll tell you why they're gonna say you're a hypocrite. They're gonna say you're a hypocrite because
Yeah, no, they say it all the time. I don't give a shit.
Even if there isn't an overarching or some type of like, you know, policy that could just like advocate or just gonna make this happen, you have acquired a lot of wealth. Why don't you start distributing your wealth to try to at least?
I do, but socialism is not about wealth distribution. Even though I do that, but socialism is not about wealth distribution. Again, like I said, that's a misunderstanding. And people also have fucking, a lot of dummies have actually canceled me over fucking buying a house and shit because they're stupid. But
I checked out
socialism
is at its
very roots about making sure that you earn what you fucking make.
Hold on. Okay. You wouldn't move 5 niggas from Skid Row in that beautiful house. I've seen it on Google. You know you would not do it. And socialism would not be proud with you.
Wait, that's not social. Wait, what the fuck? That's...
Share your resources, brother.
Because that has nothing to do with socialism. Why would I fucking do that? I can't individually solve problems. If personal charity was a foolproof method of solving the underlying problems that exist in society, and anyone who gave money to charities was deemed a socialist, then Jeff Bezos would be the biggest fucking socialist around. It's not about that at all. It's about how you make your money.
That's usually for
tax
purposes.
Do you have capital?
Okay.
Do you or it's more so about earning a larger percentage of wages that you are creating for the company that you work for. That's what socialism is about. It's about getting the adequate pay and autonomy that you have in your life.
I would be down to give away, the majority of my resources that I've acquired by working so hard. If I seen Hassan do it first, if you were like, yo, listen, man, I'm for real.
Okay,
if you liquidated
you
all your
then,
shit and I saw you with a nice, a nice tent that you were kicking it with, with like, like just one of those little fans with the battery. And I'm like, yo, if he's doing that, maybe I should sell my Lamborghini.
Okay, but you're missing the point because I don't want anyone to be living inside of tents. And I think that we have enough money as we collectively create
maybe a mobile trailer
wealth to ensure that. I have no problem paying my taxes. You earlier asked if I like dodge tax or anything.
No, I don't think I have any problem paying
my taxes. I pay 55% or something like that. I live in Los Angeles. You know what I mean? I pay the highest.
You use some tax breaks though. You're working inside your house. I know you.
No.
So you're saying
no,
you don't?
Not at all. No.
You don't use the tax system to your benefit
at all. It
doesn't
even matter. What I'm trying to say is that I don't do that. But what I'm trying to say is I would rather I have no issue paying higher percentage of taxes even now. But there are also a lot of untaxed income out there that billionaires and millionaires take advantage of.
I agree.
Okay. Like, for example, there's a concept called buy, borrow, die. These guys, instead of paying taxes, they'll just assume debt, right? They'll go to a bank and they'll say, I have $7 billion in assets. Give me $100 million right now. That's how Elon Musk, for example, just bought Twitter. He took $40 billion from a bunch of different banks. So he took that as a loan. Now all he needs to do is pay off the incredibly tiny interest rate on that loan, on this, wonderful financial package that they afford him that they would never afford to the random Joe Schmo when you try to get a fucking loan. So that's how they pay. That's what they do rather than pay taxes, because now that's debt.
But hold on,
he has debt that he can use against all the taxes that he has to pay.
Well, is that necessarily
called buy, borrow, die?
No. And I believe you on that. So that's where I would ask you. It feels like you're just like most Americans, and not necessarily believing in what people would say is socialism. You just believe that the richest people of this country should actually not be allowed to weasel and squeeze themselves out of not paying what's actually owed.
If Jeff Bezos paid my tax percentage, we would have like 90% of the problems would be fucking diminished. Okay.
But no one does that.
No one even in my financial predicament even does that, except for like, I guess, Twitch streamers that I do know that don't give a shit and don't try to like shelter their assets or anything. But that's not even socialism. Socialism is about the means of production. Like when you make content on your own, right? You're your own boss, right? Have you ever worked a job under someone else though before you started doing this?
No, of course. Well, I mean, so my last job was at Verizon Wireless in Brandsburg, New Jersey.
Perfect. So you worked at Verizon, right? Mm-hmm. And you had no control over your own schedule. You had no control over your own life. You had no control over what you fucking wear. They made you wear those ugly ass red polo tees, right?
So I worked at a corporate company, so it was black with the red Verizon lettering.
Okay, yeah. But regardless, like, you had no meaningful control over your own life. Yes, socialism is about ensuring that you at least have somewhat of a say, democratizing the workplace, and have somewhat of a say and more autonomy over the profits that you're generating for the company.
Do you not believe
what socialism is about? It has nothing to do with, like, fucking, you know, I don't know, just being poor and living in a tent with a fan or anything like that.
Okay, so, and you know, I don't think anyone's a bad human in terms of saying that, oh, no, people deserve to, like, be homeless, right? So, like, me intuitively believes that, yo, everyone should have some type of, especially when you're in the United States, which we've seen the extremes of wealth that we're like, well, shoot, maybe he could, afford less than owning a fucking island. Everybody in fucking Skid Row could just have a place to, like, lay their head other than outside. I don't think no one thinks that. I then ask you, though, in terms of meritocracy, do you believe that a lot of what you have been afforded in life, because I do, I believe that I've made sacrifices, I've worked harder, I've done the necessary things to try to get ahead, and I'm not going to lie, this is one of the reasons I can't get down with that. It's like, yo, Robbie, like, if I didn't really have to do shit to at least have a menial, decent life, and everybody else were going to have a downgrade and nobody else was going to have, like, all these great things, I'm like, fuck it. I'm not going to do shit. And
no, that's the problem I don't think meritocracy is real. I'll just tell you right now. I'm a profoundly successful individual, and I don't think meritocracy is real. I think it's a lie that they tell people, because we have no way. We have no way of understanding whether a kid that was born in Oblak or a kid born in, like, fucking Mongolia has the capacity to achieve the same level of success that we did, because
I'm not saying it's fair.
Fucking different spawn point.
I'm not saying it's fair, but there's a lot of people.
Plays a gigantic role in people's developments, and things have gone right in your life, right? I'm not diminishing your hard work. I'm sure you work very hard. I work very hard. I fucking, you know, I stream for 10 hours a day.
Yeah, but there's people who would have made those sacrifices. Okay? That's the point I'm trying to say. There's people who would have made those sacrifices. There's people who aren't as eloquent, who aren't as rational, and you could be like, oh, no, this is a product of something else. But you are special in a sense because, okay, let's not think about the people who don't even have the opportunity to do what you're doing. How many streamers...
No.
How many streamers get online every day and they're trying to break down certain shit that might be congruent to what you're doing, but they don't have the same result? You're doing something better than them, brother. You don't think that
I understand that. I understand that. However, there should still be a base level of security afforded to every single person so they can, if they wish to do so, maximize on their potential. And right now, with the current system that we exist under, we do not do that. A lot of people's potential is robbed because of the zip code that they're born into. And I think that needs to change. And as a matter of fact, societies that do have better social safety nets have higher upward social mobility. That's why you look at European countries, European nations, and you see far better success in terms of upward social mobility in countries like that, because they have social safety nets that are more adequate. If you are not fearful that your health, your well-being is tied to your employment like you do here in the United States of America, you can make lateral moves. You can go and switch a job without fear that, like, listen, if I switch a job and that job doesn't offer me healthcare, I'm fucked if I get sick. You know what I mean? That's a huge L that Americans take on a daily basis. Okay. Same with college. Plenty of people in plenty of other countries can get that education.
What'd you go to college for?
Literally pay you to go to college. In America, you got to go to fucking Afghanistan and get your dick blown off so you can get that shit paid for, because education is the only viable method of upward social mobility. It's fucking ridiculous.
Wait, what'd you go to? You went to Rutgers as well. What'd you go to college
for? Yeah. I went to Rutgers. I went to University of Miami, and then I went to Rutgers.
What were you studying?
I was able to do that because
What were you studying?
Political science.
Political science.
Yeah.
This is where, like, I also fall off that bandwagon, and I think about people like you and definitely people like me, right? So I went, and I have a biomathematics degree. You have a political science degree. There's people who go to college who literally skate by. And yes, they may accrue some debt, but they're there for the experience. And a lot of times, you know, back in the day, Sally Mae or maybe Navient or whatever the hell, or maybe some like, you know, subsidized.
GI
like,
Bill?
You know, yeah. Well, that would be paid for. I'm talking about people rack up charges like that their either parents sign off for, or they look at like, I'll pay back later in life. And then they'll go to college and not even take anything challenging. I'm actually a double major. So it's biomathematics. And I've,
right,
and I've
me too in communication as well, but that's bullshit degree. Okay, on top of
exactly
science, which
exactly
is also bullshit.
Sociology is my second degree, brother. So you're telling me, yo, I used to go to sociology drunk, never really paid attention, never studied for shit. I still I had a 3.8 in that shit. I got like one C and one B. Anyway, here's the thing: you want me to believe that meritocracy doesn't exist? When I knew how hard I had to work for the degree, even though I didn't use it. Granted, I didn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
The biomath degree. And I'm just extrapolating to other people. In life, you're going to get what you deserve, what you work for. And if we push a message that...
That's not true. I'll tell you the counter to that. You think the parent of three children in Oklahoma that's working for 30 grand a year as a teacher is not fucking working hard? She has to come back from school and then go do Uber deliveries in order to make ends meet. That person is working just as hard as you, if not way harder.
And that person has made mistakes.
We have no way of rewarding those people, and we don't see those people.
No, stop it. Stop. Hold on.
Infinitely hardworking, immensely hardworking, that do not get the adequate compensation for their labor. That doesn't mean that they're not working hard or working smart. They're doing all of that.
No.
The
stop
idea
it.
That you're going to succeed, I think, is still absolutely reliant on factors that are completely outside of our control. And I say that as someone who is immensely successful. I said it as someone who is I recognize my own success, and I also recognize a privilege that allowed me to get to this level.
No,
I want to make sure that other people can also. They're not going to be as successful as me.
But
if they want to, they should be able to have the opportunities.
Let me just stop you right there. Okay, for your audience of mine, let me give you my story. I was born in Spanish Town, Jamaica. There's videos until I was 10, 11 years old running around with barefoot in a place called Clarendon, Jamaica. I lived in a place called Grantham, right? It's the most unlikely story that I'm here. My mom came up here after breaking up with my father, and she worked three jobs. Never had a car. She walked from place to place, took buses. She never had nothing. What she instilled in us, and this is why, like, you know, I always come to America and listen to people bitch about this shit, be like, yo, y'all don't even know where, y'all don't really know the shit that's bad. When she came over here, the reason why I, like, of course, like, the dream of being a doctor, everybody wanted to do, but the reason why I got a biomathematics degree is because I saw my mom work three jobs.
Wait, she rich is your mom now?
Well, I retired her.
Okay, she worked three jobs.
But it is still
made
in
ends
us.
Meet. She worked really fucking hard, but she's not wealthy. So why do you think that there's such a concept?
Yeah, because it's opportunity and it's what you put into it. Yes, she had obviously a disadvantage.
Enough?
Hold on, she had a disadvantage. So when she came from Jamaica, she was a teacher. When you come from a third world country with a teaching degree, you have to go to college here again. She went to Felician College, which, you know, it's in Jersey. Then she went to Teachers College again. So she did what she was a teacher for damn near 10 years, and
she worked hard, and yet she still didn't get millions of dollars.
No, hold on. But hear what I'm trying to say, because again, that experience was her getting here. You know what that instilled in us after we seen our mom do that? Ain't nobody ever work harder than me. You can't name a motherfucker who work harder than me. And
I know, but
honestly,
your starting point was way more fortunate than your mom because of all of her actions. You're making
but
the
that's
point
what
that
life
I'm making
is.
As well.
Hold on, that's
I wouldn't
what life
be in
is.
This position if it wasn't for my parents who worked hard, my parents who were relatively affluent when I was growing up. That
Hassan,
that
that's
me the
what
best
life
education
is.
Possible.
Your starting point is based on your parents. For example, you know why my mom was in that situation?
Yeah, and you have no control over that. No. That's my point.
Yeah, but again,
that is literally my point. My point is, you have no control over your starting point. And that's a huge component. That's why there are plenty of studies conducted.
This
on
isn't
this
a fair race. I never said it's a fair race. I'm just saying it is a race.
It's not fair.
So
and
so,
I want to
so
make
for
it
example,
more fair is what I'm saying. I'm not talking about the equality of outcome. I'm talking about the equality of America, equality of opportunity. Which
no, it is because if maybe American, you don't make it,
right.
If you don't make it, you have to push the ball forward for someone else. My mom could have never got to where she was coming from. She was battling for censorship half the time she was here, so she could have never really made it to the point I was at.
We should fix that. That's a thing that I advocate for, by the way.
And I agree as well. But what I'm trying to say is that the story of America, and when we act like, oh, no, there is like a bunch of excuses that people can fall on. My bad, my monitor. Okay. Bunch of excuses people can fall on. My mom brought the baton to a certain level. And it's the same thing. If your parents is from anything, granted, I feel like you're using survivor's remorse. Like, yeah, you had maybe a head start.
You're using survivor's bias. I don't have remorse. I'm happy. I love my life. I recognize my
remorse. I mean remorse. I mean remorse.
But I'm not like going to apologize for it. I'm not like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. No, fuck that. I work hard every fucking day and I'm very fortunate, but I recognize how fortunate I am. And I also recognize how unfortunate other people are. And I want to live in a fucking world where everyone at the very least has an equality of opportunity, true equality of opportunity.
That's never possible.
I'm not saying like, oh, you work this hard, I work that hard, everyone should get paid the same. I've never advocated for that whatsoever. I'm simply stating that at its core, there are plenty of people who are fucked over from the starting point. They just have bad RNG. And they have a bad starting point, and they have a bunch of horrible things that happen to them throughout their lives, which they cannot overcome. And I do think that the human condition is awesome, and they could potentially, if given different circumstances, a different set of circumstances, they could improve their living conditions.
Wait, hold on.
But there are a lot of rich people that don't want to allow that to happen because they've made it. They're like, fuck you, I got mine. I'm going to kick the fucking ladder down behind myself.
Yep.
Your mom could have been in a way better situation overall if there was a better transitioning program from Jamaica to the United States of America. If she didn't have to struggle, she never should have worked three fucking jobs. I think that, and she should have always been able to make a living wage across the board regardless.
Oh, okay, I agree with that, but I'm going to call you your bullshit here. Listen, I'm going to ask you a question you're probably going to deny, but I know intuitively you believe in nepotism.
Wait, let's hear it.
You absolutely believe in nepotism, correct?
What do you mean, believe in nepotism? Okay. No, I think that nepotism is only a problem because of the current system that we exist under. That's the only fucking way that we can actually get a job.
Wait, hold on.
After college, I went in to apply. I graduated with a 3.85, right? Double major, you're supposed to be able to get in at least to like get in the door at any of these fucking companies or any of these to get an interview. No, all that was afforded to me was fucking selling insurance. Okay. That's all I had. It was available to me. I went in and I did all these fucking, I did all these interviews and it was all about selling life insurance to my fucking friends and family. Okay. So I am a beneficiary of nepotism that still also plays a role into the privilege that I have. I went in and I worked for my uncle. He had a 26-person startup called the Young Turks. I'm sure you've seen it. I'm sure you've seen their videos, right? They didn't have anyone working doing biz dev shit at the time. I didn't know anything, but I was a go-getter. I was like, I was hungry and I didn't have any money. So I was like, fuck it. This is the only job I can have. And maybe I can develop like a larger media role eventually. Okay. This is something that I admit all the fucking time. But obviously, I want to make sure that every other person at least doesn't even have to fucking rely on family members so that they can truly unlock their potential.
And this is where, I'm going to quote your arch enemy, which, you know what I mean?
My arch enemy? Who's my arch enemy? Yeah. I don't have any enemies. They're like irrelevant.
Andrew Tate,
random
my
people,
guy. Like, come on, man. Andrew Tate. I'm going to quote him. This world we live in is player versus player. And what I mean by player versus player is like, number one, nepotism exists, right? Which means you're working hard for you and your family tree and your family line. And whatever resources you gain in this lifetime, you will probably pass on those privileges and luxuries to your offspring or somehow to your family who will be in a more privileged position.
And I don't think this world is PvP, honestly. I think that that's capitalist dogma is what I call it. we think that we live in a cruel world where everyone is motivated by self-interest, sure, but there are so many collaborative components, whether it be your own family, whether it be your own community, whether it be your close friends, that that play a significant role in societal development. And our education from the start has led us to think that it's a zero-sum game when it's never been a zero-sum game. It's always been done through cooperation. There's never been a single person that's ever succeeded without help from others. They might have unfairly or fairly compensated them for that labor, but individuals do not make champions, okay? They rely on the strength of others. And united, we achieve such profound accomplishments. No one's building a fucking skyscraper on their own.
Okay, and by the way, I'm arguing a point that honestly, just like, you know, for the benefit of people like me, like, we want to believe you, but like, you know, and by the way, we want that to be true, but we just know that's not true. Like in just how we grow up, like, we obviously want, you know, every human that gets born this year to have the same opportunity to make it in whatever realm, and it should be off of, not only should they be entitled to a minimum level of living, but they should be able to achieve whatever they want to achieve based on their work ethic, this and third, within their lifetime. But that's just not true. And I think, you know, that's not true. And when it comes to, like, put it like this, well, if you believe that, I'm gonna throw a fastball at you, or maybe a curveball. Do you believe in reparations? Because if you don't,
100%.
So you believe, you know what I mean, they should be cutting.
You don't believe in reparations?
I'm not saying I necessarily do. I just can't see people giving it. I'm gonna be honest.
Wait, you don't believe in reparations?
No, it's not necessarily say I don't believe in it. I say I can't believe. I don't think that the people in power will ever concede to that. So
yeah, but who cares? Yeah, those guys are fucking assholes. I'm talking about you. It's you and me right now. We're having a conversation. Do you think reparations are fair or not?
No, yeah. But I'm not. Okay. Also, the reason why I'm also not quick to jump to just saying that, because a lot of people use that as the excuse. Like, oh, okay, we should be awarded with certain shit. So, you know what I mean? Until it happens, let's
I don't
not...
think it's an award, by the way. I don't think it's a reward. I think it's restitution. It is fair. Okay, it is just.
Let's not do
robbery.
Semantics too crazy. Let's not do... Like, there are certain people who live and die on, well, until I get what's owed to me, I'm not going to continue and strive forward by doing more work or doing whatever. In reality, you get left behind. You know what I mean? Because number one, like, this is pretty much as tangible at this point as the motherfucking, you know, as Bigfoot. Like, has there really been any substantial conversations that it's even going, like, I mean, it's we've seen certain things what? enter like, you know, in terms of being a bill to, like, you know, give reparations, but it's nothing really ever tangible that came out of this. You know what I mean? It's really kind of all of, like...
Well, America did give reparations. Do you know that? America actually did give reparations.
To who?
In the aftermath of the abolitionist slavery. They gave it to slave owners. They lied to black people, and they said that black people would get reparations. That never happened, but they gave reparations to slave owners. That should tell you about what is just in this society, right?
Okay, so then we get to specifics. I talked to this person who, you know, salute to him. He's a brilliant guy. His name is Tariq Nasheed. You ever heard of him? Maybe we've talked about it. I don't know.
Tariq Nasheed, I'm very familiar with his work, yes.
Are you cool with him or not? You probably don't fuck with him either, right? But he goes hard for the
ADOS movement.
Yeah, the ADOS movement, and he believes in reparations. What do you believe?
I think in the eyes of a white supremacist society, it doesn't matter if you're an immediate descendant of slave or not. I have a lot of African first generation friends that may even come here and assume that, like, racist white people or racist people in general are going to say, oh, well, you're an African migrant, so you're in a different situation. It's like, nope. In the eyes of, you know, a lot of racist people, they just don't discriminate between whether you're a first generation black person or not. You're just black. So I think that white supremacy impacts black people regardless of their you know, their original material conditions and how they got here.
And by the way, like, you know, even harping back to your question about if I believe in reparations, again, I was born in Jamaica, you know what I mean, which is Jamaica's a colony of, you know, the UK. You know, we've been, like, the Queen and others have been, you know, it's on our currency, it's on a lot of things, you know, at least odes to her. That's
slated to change. Jamaica's leave the Commonwealth.
No, of course. Like, we've been on that for a little bit. But, however, you know what I mean? It's like, do we feel like we would be more well off if, like, you know what I mean, say Britain was like, yo, here's this fucking check for every one of you guys who are, you know, native and born to the island that could possibly put you in a better situation, and which would be a minuscule part of, like, you know, all of the oppression and all of the, you know, like, I'm with that, of course.
You would be immediately better off jump. You would be better off.
I agree.
However, the economic calculation of reparations is a difficult one. I'll admit, but that's the bare minimum. Like, giving immediate financial restitution, immediate financial compensation for some of these wrongs is just a starting point.
Let me ask you a question.
As Malcolm X once famously said, like, white supremacy is like being stabbed in the back with a knife. Okay. Some people want to fucking pull out the knife a little bit. Most people are arguing whether you want to pull out the knife, you know, 10%, 20%, but that's not how this works. You have to pull out the knife and start mending the wound, start tending to that wound. And people, and most white people don't even want to talk about the knife's existence to begin with. So there are varying degrees of blindness to the historical impact of slavery, but reparations is just pulling out the knife.
No. I agree with you, but that calculation is also, put like this. The reason why someone like me, as opposed to like Tariq, right? Like, Tariq is pushing, he has a whole movement, he's pushing for what that would look like. What I tell people of color, and I tell especially black people, especially, like, you know, people who might be immigrants like me, is like, hey, listen, check this out. If you sit here and you have this excuse like, yo, hey, we're waiting for what we're owed, you're going to be left behind. Because in all honesty,
I don't think people wait. I don't think people, like, I don't believe that people need to survive, right? I don't think people are being held back because they are waiting for reparations.
No, if you're believing in movements that's turned this into some tangible thing, like if like a lot of stuff with Tariq Nasheed, it's like, yo, hey, once we get here, then it happens. Bro, I just tell people, I'm like, yo, keep doing your thing. Hopefully, you know, people realize, you know, like, which usually it's never happened in society where someone just admits their own wrong or admonishes himself. But even if it's like, you know, it's held by somebody else and they're like, okay, cool, we will do this in reparations, it should be, as much as it's not only owed and deserved and this and third, just don't fucking wait for it, man. And that's my whole thing. You get what I mean? So, I don't know.
I just don't think anyone's actually just sitting around waiting for reparations. Like, I've never met someone that's like, I'm not actually going to work today because my reparations check is going to come in the mail eventually. I think most black people are understandably pessimistic about a white supremacist society to do that, to be like, oh, one day reparations is going to happen.
I think some people also use it as a reason to excuse behavior, though. And I'm not saying all.
I know what you're trying to get at, but I don't agree with it, is what I'm going to say.
I'm not going to say
that all. A lot from people that are, you know, the more Candace Owens types will say stuff like that, or, you know, Republicans say stuff like that.
I hear what you're saying, and I'm not painting that broad brush to say everybody, but I do know people who, you know, because they have ignored they're so hell-bent on some of the things that's happened historically, and obviously some of the things that's happened that's going against, you know, people of color and people who are especially black, right? Like myself and them, and whether they were born here or not. Usually I've seen some of them just kind of like, you know what, this is, I'm not saying all, and I wouldn't even give them a percentage on it. They've like almost kind of like fell into it a bit. And that's one of the things that, in terms of spreading the message, again, granted, I have overcame a lot of odds, but if we just kind of make it kind of, hey, this is a normal that you should think that, you can't do the same, or you shouldn't be, you know, fighting against some of these odds you're against. Bro, I just don't think people of color are going to go anywhere. Because honestly, I don't think they're finna give no type of, they're not, like, it, you're, we're all going to be.
Recognize that reparations is probably
we're gonna be
impossible to achieve.
Exactly. Yo.
I already said that. I mean, I think it's a moral right. I think it's a starting point.
But if you just admitted what you just admitted, right? It's just a conversation that's basically null and void. If we're saying that, we don't even think it's probably going to happen. You know what I mean? It shouldn't be.
And I'm not going to.
We're not talking about what should. We're talking about what probably is.
Making an honest effort to try to make that change, though, because everything I believe in, is unrealistic in the short term. But that's not what I'm in the business of. I'm not in the business of short term gain. I'm in the business of trying to get people to understand why they feel shafted and why their anger is actually righteous, but redirect that anger not to like random immigrants that are trying to make a living or black people or anything like that, and to recognize that it's the system that is designed this way to shaft them. So that's what I do. That's what I believe in. I'm sure you've heard this said before, but a society only prospers when old men plant trees they will never sit in the shade of. And I believe that it's, you got to put building blocks down to ensure that we have a better future for future generations, even if you are not going to see the immediate tangible benefits right now. So that's the way I live my life.
Okay. And I agree to a large capacity of that. And that's why I said, like, again, going back to all the front of the conversation, is that I listen to you a great amount. And by the way, one of the reasons, and I don't know what your issue is with Pool, but like I only listen to YouTubers and streamers, and I listen to people who I think could at least give a real rational explanation of even their talking points, even if I listen to a lot of shit I don't agree with. You know what I mean? Like, I got into like listening to a lot of Fox News like a couple of years ago, and I used to be like, yo, I don't agree with them, but I'm like, yo, are these people just gonna say shit, or they're gonna try to substantiate their bullshit? And even if they tried to, I'm like, this is more fulfilling than just listening to an echo chamber. So, you know, again,
I mean, I listen to a lot of Fox News. I probably listen to more Fox News than most people's dads do. So I love listening to Fox News. I mean, they're fucking batshit, but at least they're entertaining. Tim Pool's not even entertaining. He's just classic, claims he's a liberal.
What's
he's a
y'all
Republican.
Be? Hey, listen, I'm used to beefing hip hop. What's y'all be? Have y'all talked?
I mean, we interact with one another every now and then, but I don't like his worldview at all. I think he is a dishonest a grifter for the most part. He claims he's a liberal, he's not a liberal. He is a believer in a lot of the awful ideas. And advances the agenda of a lot of these like nefarious, talking points that the Republican Party and sometimes even the Democratic Party engages in.
And this is the last thing I ask you, yo, my man Andrew Tate, brother. Again, I wonder if I've never heard you speak on this particularly, right? I know some of your hard line opinions on him, but do you feel like he crossed the threshold of being deplatformed? I feel he didn't. I feel his content could be taken and interpreted in many different lenses, but I don't think the threshold, but you have to realize what my threshold is. My threshold is that you are serving up content or ideology or ideas or rhetoric that is of imminent danger to humans, individuals. That even might include kids. I don't believe he was. What do you think about that?
I think Andrew Tate pissed off conservative white moms. That's what happened eventually. He used misogyny as a launching pad for his own personal career, right? He wanted to use that to launch his own multi-level marketing scheme, Hustlers University. And because of that, because he just like didn't even hold back on some of the worst components of misogyny and try to mask his rhetoric at all, because of that, he became profoundly successful, but he made himself the face of misogyny on the internet. Now, a lot of these platforms are responsible, significantly more responsible than Andrew Tate is personally, right? The platforms are the real issue here. But of course, they're going to use that as an opportunity, if, especially if it pisses off enough people. They're going to use that as an opportunity to chalk up a W to make it seem like they have no place for hatred on our platform. That's why. My man was a Richard Spencer of misogyny, okay? He was the poster boy. Was walking around saying the most insane shit, like beating women, you know, pimping them.
No, all this other stuff. That wasn't necessarily his rhetoric. That wasn't necessary. No, we got to be honest to him and fair with him now. He wasn't necessarily saying, hey, go beat a bunch of women. I think his worldview, by the way, I'm going to be honest with you. I do believe a lot of things that was later taken out of context, he was very, it was hyperbole, bro.
For sure. I think he was exaggerating. Okay, hold on.
But he believed
that
too.
Whether he truly believes it or not doesn't change its impact, though, because he was like quite literally like churning out misogynistic content specifically to gain more prominence. Now, there's also stuff that he did on the other side, like in his personal life and whatnot, which I'm not even going to get into because I don't think those are the reasons why he got banned off these platforms.
Which, by the way, some people have had inaccurate narratives about. Some people have inaccurate because I ain't going to lie to you. When I first heard it, I was like, oh, yeah, he was beating a girl, like blah, blah. And then I realized that was not true. You know, that was some
That's BDSM. Some of it is BDSM. Okay. Some of it is actually abusive. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm specifically talking about his commentary, right? He thought that there would be no repercussions for becoming the poster boy of misogyny. He saw the literal benefits of it, okay? And then when it got to a point where, like, he was exploding in popularity and you got little kids going back home and, like, you know, at school and shit, talking 11-year-olds talking to other 11-year-old girls being like, huh, you're a woman, you don't know anything. And then teachers start hearing about it, and then conservative parents even start having an issue with this. Of course, everyone's saying Andrew Tate, you know, that's the dark side of that profound amount of fame that you reached. When you know, people are going to say, all right, we got to deal with this issue.
Hey, I also want to ask you this one thing too, because I've been following this too. I want to bridge a debate, which I actually do think you're good at debate, but I want to bridge a debate between you and I feel like you've been ducking him, no cap. I feel like you've been ducking my man Myron out of Fresh and Fit. I feel like when you debated Andrew Tate is someone who operates off anecdotal experience, but is definitely not in tune with a lot of statistics and facts. And knowing your history and knowing your background, you got to spar with someone
I'm not ducking him. I was actually down to debate them. I was down to debate Fresh and Fit.
You and Myron, Dolo. I think there was H3, but really, I think you and Myron, that's the heavyweight fight.
I'm still down to do it. It's just that, like, the way I see it, I think debates are pseudo-intellectual sparring. I think if you're rhetorically gifted, you don't even need to have access to all the information. It's not necessarily the side that has the truth that wins debates. It's the side that is more capable of, like, outspeaking the opponent that wins debates functionally.
And
when you're winning a debate, what are you winning? There's 40% of your audience that's not going to change their opinion. 40% of their audience is not going to change the opinion. 20% in the middle could go either way, potentially. And
you're fighting for the 20.
Shapes and colors. And
you're fighting
for
the 20. Honestly,
you're fighting for that 20%, which is correct. So that's why, because I don't think it's about, like, establishing the truth, and because I think it's about, like, winning over 20%, I usually don't debate people that don't have, like, a significant audience, because...
Bro, they have a significant audience. Stop it.
Because, like, for me, I'm very open about it. I'm very open about it. Like, it has nothing to do with someone being, like, super skilled in debate or anything. But I usually don't have a conversation with them because, like, why give even potentially dangerous ideas airspace, especially when there are people that are more popular who has a larger percent, a larger 20% overall that I could take from.
Hey, listen, I'm going to call cap on that just because I heard you talk about, and this is how I view that sphere, right? If it was anything, it was Andrew Tate, Myron, then Sneeko. And I've heard you talk about Sneeko, and I'm like, of course, you know, he just got, you know, deplatformed from YouTube. But if you...
Yeah, but he fell down a way different rabbit hole than I think other people, unfortunately.
You're right, but that's what I'm saying. why would you duck Myron? Like, it feels like you got.
I just don't think he has a large enough audience. But I mean, I don't have an issue with like debating him. I want to
be a part of that. I want to be the middleman, or at least be a. Well, I don't want to pick sides on that.
Look, when they're hitting more than like, I don't know, 1,000 people or whatever in their fucking live streams, I'll consider it.
No, they
like
do.
I talked to you.
It's on YouTube.
I talked to you not because like I was going to debate you or anything. I just, but you know, you have a much larger audience beyond, beyond like however many people are watching you currently on Twitch.
No, I get it. And put it like this. And I remember like watching that whole thing when it was like, I think they were trying to set something up with H3. It's like, listen, it's one thing debating the personality, but you need someone like, bro, you're armed with a lot of facts and a lot of things that to the natural and like, I don't even know how people thought this conversation went, but it's like, I've seen you steamroll motherfuckers, bro. You feel me? So like,
yeah, I mean, I think I could probably steamroll them too.
Myron.
I'm not.
Hey, listen. If you steamroll Myron,
I don't think they have anything unique to say that I haven't heard a million times over.
No. Well, it won't. It'll be counteracting because you have a lot of points. It'll be counteracting. He knows all the stats that he needs to know, just like how you know all the stats you need to know.
Yeah, I've looked at some of his stats. They're ridiculous. Oh,
and that's why I want to see. It's like a heavyweight fight. It's like
I wouldn't say it's a heavyweight fight. That's what I'm saying. Like Andrew Tate fight. at his peak was a heavyweight fight. That is definitely one I will take on because I do think that his rhetoric was. You know,
you had a lot to gain from that.
A lot of people repeating dangerous. Ideas like really incorrect shit without even thinking about it. But I don't think they're heavyweight at all. They're a bit washed, I'll be honest.
Hassan.
Brittany Renner rolled them. And I think like since
they haven't really made a big. Hassan. I got to come to LA anyway. I would come out, just like I was the middleman between them and Brittany Renner, I'd come out to LA because honestly, I'm a gambling man, and I'm a betting man, and I really think you catch the L on this one. And again,
no, I think you're trying to get me riled up. So
I feel like you're ducking.
I don't have an issue with doing it. I'm down if it's if you know it's convenient for me. But I'm telling you,
it doesn't even have to be like something. Listen, it could be this week on Twitch. It could be in person. It doesn't matter. I think that you are one of those people who are an intellectual bully. And when you have more info and when you could hit people with facts that they can't counteract, it's an easy conversation. And I see you do it with one of the greatest, which is Tate. Tate is a smooth guy. He could talk all around. But you started to hit him with a few things. And once you started having him backpedal, people are like, whoa, did he stun him? I don't think you do that with Myron. And I know you don't want to. I feel like you saying that they're not big enough is you just not wanting to do it. I'm telling you, I'm down to put myself in the midst.
My man, I've debated Ann Coulter, Larry Elder. Like, there are plenty of people that I've debated. When Myron was, literally a Fed. Back when he was straight up working for the federal government, I was out there debating people that they're basically getting the talking points from.
Yo, I hear what you're saying, but like, you see, you weren't debating about these particular subjects, right? So like, again, there's only two people who could intellectually
I've talked about misogyny and things like that. Sure.
Yeah, but their topics isn't about misogyny. Like you think they're misogynistic. Their topic isn't about misogyny. They have a particular view of traditional modes of
living or something. Like
traditional modes with the right people.
Of existence.
Yo, right now, you know what you're doing? You're doing the Floyd, man. You're picking fights.
But I admit that. Why wouldn't I? Yeah.
So you're saying you're ducking them.
Yeah, I'm 100% picking my fights because if someone is irrelevant, like if Floyd Mayweather fought every single person that challenged him, he'd be out here fucking fighting in the streets every goddamn day. Yeah, when you're Floyd Mayweather, you don't have to do that. You can pick your fights. They are the ones who need to work a little bit harder. If they get to like a good level where they have a decent enough audience, you know, decent enough sized audience, then maybe I'll consider it. Which is why I was super down when they were first popping off. Because back then it was a good time to do it.
I mean, they get a lot of
they're getting more relevancy from this conversation than they had in weeks, I would say.
Oh my God. Yo, Hassan, you're a legend no matter what, okay? And listen, we're going to have some similarity no matter what because we're both from Rutgers. New Brunswick? Or don't tell me you went to Newark, brother.
No, New Brunswick, yeah.
Come on, man. Like myself. Listen, yo, great conversation. I like to talk to people like you who I feel is, you know, very intellectually sharp and also could pivot and also, you know, punch back.
I don't think I'm that intellectually sharp. I think I'm a dumbass. But I bring common sense talking points to the table.
That is your... Okay, stop the bullshit. Listen, the reason why you're popping off so much on, like, Twitch and these platforms, of course, you're talking on some common sense level, which always... Like, think about even when Jon Stewart popped off with like the Daily Show, like he made it seem very common to the common man and he added some comedy, but like he was super intellectually superior to a lot of the people he was going at. Let's be honest, brother. So again, I'm giving you the credit, but hey, you know, we could have these debates, but I do want to see you in mine. That's what I'm saying. Other than that,
maybe
I think that's the only thing I've seen you with.
If they got their analytics to improve a little bit, then I would do it.
You can go viral, man. I'll be in the mix.
Okay. All right. Well, this was a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time out.
And by the way, I want to invite you and encourage you, if you have anything, any issue with me, I would love to talk to you. I didn't know this was going to happen today. But I'm very happy that whether it's an agreement, disagreement, or just trading of ideas, we could just speak to each other. And I appreciate you for that, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
Have a good one, man.
Wait, do you get off? Like, I'm exhausted, bro. I'm getting off stream. Like, are you still?
Oh, no, I'm going to keep streaming. I have some stuff going on now.
Jesus Christ. I'm exhausted. Yeah. I'm getting out of here. Yo, salute to Hassan.
I've only done 5 hours and 33 minutes. There's so much more to cover still.
Bro, I did 5 hours and 37. I'm done. Like, I'm not Kai Cenat. I got to get out of here, bro. This is my boy Kai. You have my Twitch.
I have your Twitter Discord. And your Discord.
Yeah. Anytime you need to hit me about anything, just hit me and we'll talk about it.
All right. We'll do.
I love you.
Peace.
Woo. Oh, my God. Chat, I am exhausted. I know y'all gonna be like, yo, what the fuck? Nigga, I'm exhausted, bro. Yo, that nigga is a streamer. Hey, chat. Hold on, I'm about to open the chat real quick. Did I catch a W or L on that? Did I catch a W or L? Did I catch a W or a L on that? What y'all think, a W or L? I think I held it down still. Somebody said up to you. Nah, I think I held it down. Nah, I think I held it down, bro. Nah, I think I held it down. I don't give a fuck what y'all think it's talking about. Oh, man. Oh, boy. Okay. Damn, do I still gotta stream? Yo, streaming is so fucking hard. Yo, I literally look up and give it to this motherfucker.